Please stand by. Good day and welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Migrating to IMS 10. Today's conference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, one in a series on the latest technology in IMS 10, you'll learn how we've streamlined the migration process from IMS version 8 and version 9 systems to IMS 10. The speaker for today's teleconference is Rich Lewis, Executive IT Specialist, IMS Advanced Technical Support. And now I'd like to hand it over to our speaker, Rich. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, and hello to everyone who's called in today. I appreciate you listening to this. Our topic today, of course, is migrating to IMS 10. This is one in a series of teleconferences on IMS version 10. Four have already occurred, and they're listed on page 2 of the handouts. After today's presentation, there will be one more, and that will be Susie Wendler talking about Transaction Manager and Connectivity Enhancements on November the 13th. Today's teleconference is about migrating to version 10, so it's a bit different than the others. The others talk about functional capabilities that have been added to IMS 10. Today, I'm really going to talk about how to get to IMS 10. And along with that, I'd like to inform you of an announcement that IBM made, that is the general availability of IMS version 10 will be October the 26th. So in about 2.5 weeks, IMS version 10 will be generally available. So now let's move on to the agenda for talking about migrating to IMS version 10. First, I'm going to talk about prerequisite software and how IMS can coexist with the various releases of other products. Then I'll talk about the actual installation and migration tasks, the things you need to do to migrate to version 10. Then after that, I will talk about migration considerations. What I mean by this is I'll tell you about the things that change in IMS 10 versus previous versions, so that you will recognize those things that you might need to adjust for when you migrate to IMS 10. And I'll end by talking about some changes made to the IMS publications or the IMS library. So first, let's go and look at the prerequisites and coexistence. As far as software prerequisites go, they're listed on slide 5. ZOS 1.7 is the basic prerequisite for IMS 10. So ZOS 1.7 is required. If you're going to use security, of course you need a security product such as RACF or an equivalent SAP interface security product. We still require the high-level assembler toolkit as we have for many releases now. And if you use the RLM, RLM 2.2 is required. You don't have to use the RLM. Program isolation or PI may be used as a log manager if you do not need data sharing. As far as minimum software levels for some optional functions, that is, there are things that you can use in IMS 10, but you're not required to use them. If you want to use one of these functions, then you may need some additional software or additional software levels. For example, IMS 10 has the capability of fast replication in image copy to and database recovery utilities. That's the invocation of flash copy. That requires ZOS 1.8. If you choose to use parallel recon access with DBRC, then you need transactional vSAM. That comes with ZOS DFSMS TVS, which, of course, is a separately orderable feature of ZOS. If you want to implement the Enterprise Workload Manager, not just Workload Manager, but the multi-platform Enterprise Workload Manager, then you either need ZOS 1.8, or if you have ZOS 1.7, you need the PTF listed there on page 5. You should check the release planning guide for IMS 10 for specific requirements for other functions, although there are not many, but there are some rather detailed listing of information about Java, for example, or Java use with IMS 10. The next couple of slides, 6 and 7, talk about supported connections. What I mean by this is, you oftentimes use IMS systems with other systems, CICS, DB2, other IMS systems, and this talks about which product release levels are supported with IMS 10. The general rule is if a product is supported it's supported with IMS-10. What I mean by this, if you connect an IMS-10 system via ISC to another IMS system, then it's supported with any release of IMS that's supported. So you can connect IMS-10 by ISC to IMS-9 or 8 or another IMS-10 system, or you can connect it to CICS systems at levels 3.2, 3.1, 2.3, or 2.2. For MSC connections, of course, that's an IMS to IMS connection. You can connect IMS-10 to IMS-9 or IMS-8. And for shared queues, you can share queues between IMS-10, IMS-9, and IMS-8. As far as DB2 use with IMS, an IMS-10 system can connect to any DB2 system that is supported, that is DB2 9, 8, or 7. And if you are using CICS coming into IMS for DB control services, then you can come into IMS-10 from any supported release of CICS as listed on page 7. IRLM-2.2 is required with IMS-10 if you use the IRLM as your log manager. However, if you are doing data sharing between IMS-10 and IMS-9 or 8, those systems can continue to use IRLM-2.1. Of course, they could use IRLM-2.2, but it is supported to have IMS-10 using IRLM-2.2 and other versions of IMS using IRLM-2.1, so the IRLM-2.1 and IRLM-2.2 can connect to each other. What's not supported is IRLM-2.1 being used as the log manager for IMS-10. The next page, 8, talks about DBRC migration and coexistence. IMS always supports the migration from the previous release or release minus 2. That is, we can migrate directly from 9 to 10 or directly from IMS 8 to 10. When we do the migration, we need to upgrade the recons as we've always done for migrations. And here you can see on page 8 the SPE or small programming enhancement maintenance that you put on IMS 9 so that when you upgrade your recons to IMS 10 level, IMS-9 can continue to use the recon. Similarly, there is the listing of the SPE for IMS-8. That SPE also provides compatibility support for HALDB online reorg, which was introduced in version 9. That says that you can execute online reorg in version 10, and an IMS-8 system can use the database while it's being reorganized. You just cannot execute online reorganization on IMS version 8. The next two pages list some other coexistence maintenance. The Operations Manager has coexistence SPEs listed for IMS 8 and IMS 9. This allows OM address spaces, Operations Manager address spaces, and IMSs at lower levels, non-IMS 10, to coexist with a common service layer environment with IMS 10 Operations Manager. So this maintenance is only required if you have a common service layer and you have a mixture of IMS 8 or 9 and IMS 10 in your common service layer. Similarly, there's another SPE for System Management Enhancements. If you're going to have a common service layer with a mixture of IMS versions, and this allows lower level, that is IMS 8 or IMS 9 systems, to coexist with IMS 10 using the Operations Manager and allows you to use one of the new functional capabilities in IMS 10, that is to issue a command that inserts a transaction into the queues. The potential problem here is you could use IMS 10 to issue the command which inserts the transaction, and the transaction might be processed on an IMS 8 or 9 system. If it does and that system replies to the IOPCB, that's an invalid thing to do in IMS 8 and 9, and what this maintenance does is allows that to occur but recognizes it as invalid and gives the application an AD or status code, which means it's an invalid function. So that only applies to Common Service Layer and Operations Manager. Other maintenance required with Common Service Layer is listed on slide 10. For Global Online Change, that is the Global Online Change introduced in IMS 8. If you're going to use Global Online Change with a mixture of IMS release levels, then you need this maintenance to allow the IMS systems to share one common OLC stat data set. And finally, in this coexistence area with the common service layer, resource consistency checking has an SPE for IMS 8 and 9. Resource consistency checking is not done in IMS 10. I'll talk more about that later. And what this SPE allows is for resource consistency checking to be done among IMS 8 and 9 systems with an IMS 10 system in the IMS Plex. But it does not provide support for resource consistency checking in IMS 10, and I'll talk more about that later. As far as coexistence between IMS 10 and previous releases with IMS utilities, that's listed on slide 11. Some utilities or some uses of the logs use logs only from one release. For example, the batch backout utility reads a log created by an IMS subsystem. The log archive utility, the log recovery, process logs created by one IMS subsystem. So the rule here, as always, is to use the utility from the IMS release that created the log. So if you have an IMS 9 system and you need to do batch backout, you must use the IMS 9 batch backout utility. On the other hand, some utilities, such as database recovery and change akin, have inputs potentially from multiple releases of IMS. For example, the database recovery utility will accept image copies or ISAM unloads in lieu of image copies, and change akins and logs. You might take an image copy in IMS 9, then migrate to IMS 10 and produce some logs and need to do a database recovery. That's okay. You can execute the database recovery utility with inputs from IMS 8, 9, and 10. To do that, you need to run the IMS 10 level of the utility. So the rule is, if there are inputs from multiple versions of IMS, the utility must be from the highest level of any input. That is, must be the highest release level of any IMS system that produced input to the utility. The other thing that this mentions is IMS 9 and 8 database recovery utilities cannot process any IMS 10 inputs. You cannot feed an image copy or a log or change akin created by IMS 10 into an IMS 9 or IMS 8 database recovery utility. A similar rule applies to change akin. Change akin accepts logs produced by IMS 10. Change akin processes logs produced by any version of IMS that's supported, 8, 9, or 10. And if you want to process change akin input produced by a previous change akin, that is a change akin data set as input to this execution of change akin, then that input can be from any supported version of IMS. But IMS 9 and 8 change akin cannot read or process IMS 10 inputs. Those are pretty straightforward. The good news on page 12 is here's coexistence that you don't have to worry about. Application programs are compatible with previous releases, as is almost always true in IMS, and rarely true of most other products, is that if our application programs ran in a previous version of IMS, they will continue to run in the next version without recompilation, reassembly, relink, editing, or rebinding. Similarly, databases are compatible with the previous releases. There is no conversion process to move a database from an IMS 8 or 9 level to IMS 10. A database is just a database, and it is independent of the IMS version level until you use some function that is introduced by that release level, and that really doesn't happen in version 10. So any database that you have that you're using with your IMS 8 or 9 system, no conversion process when you migrate to IMS 10. As far as log records in version 10, well, of course, IMS has some new log records in IMS version 10, and some old log records have changed. This always happens when we move from one version of IMS to another. If you, as a user, have written application programs which process IMS logs, they could be affected. I can't tell you if they will be affected, but you can determine that by understanding what log records your application programs process and determine if those log record changes, if there are any, will affect your program. Typically what users do is look at the DSECs for the log records and see if anything has changed in the DSEC when going from one version of IMS to another. You can look at log record DSECs by assembling the iLogRec macro. The easy way to do it is say rec ID equal all. That just says generate the DSECs for all the IMS log records. You could say rec ID equal a particular record type like 0708 or whatever that might be that you want to look at, and assemble only those DSECs. Since log records change, you may be affected, but more likely, tools that you purchase from vendors will be affected. And on page 14, I talk about tools migration and coexistence. Of course, when we go to a new version of IMS, things operate differently. We produce new log records, we have new recon records, etc., and tools may be affected by that. You need to contact your vendor for information on their support of IMS 10. They may require a new release or a new version or maintenance, so they may not require anything to support IMS 10. IBM has created a website with consolidated information about requirements for IBM's IMS tools when used with IMS 10. You can navigate to that website as shown on slide 14. Or you can go directly there by entering either of the two URLs shown at the bottom of the page. The first one is right along, and I don't imagine you would want to enter that. So we created a tiny URL, that is tinyurl.com/3852CS, which will take you directly to that website. The website lists all of the IBM-produced IMS tools, whether they're supported with IMS 10 or not. They all are, I think. And what the release or version level of the product, if any maintenance is required, and whether they really just tolerate version 10 or really exploit new function and take advantage of that in version 10. So you really ought to look at that website for your IBM-supplied IMS tools. For other vendors' tools, contact the vendor. They may have a similar site or just provide you with similar kinds of information. So let me move on to other considerations when going to IMS 10. First thing, BTAM, Baker TAM support has been removed. I mean, this is kind of surprising that we still have it because Baker TAM support has been withdrawn from the operating system years ago. But IMS supported some system definition macros for Baker TAM terminals, like 2740s and 2260s, System 3, System 7, that you probably don't have. So if you do have them, and I'd be very surprised if you did, they will not be supported if you have them in your SysGen input deck. For stage one, you'll get a warning message. This does not affect some other non-Victor TAM or non-VTAM terminals, like spool, read, or print. Those things listed here on page 15 are not affected. They're not really Baker TAM. They're just not VTAM. As you may know, security management utility support has been removed in IMS 10. Therefore, you cannot use SMU security in IMS 10. You must use RACF or SAF interface security. That's the only security we support in IMS 10. So that's been removed. Therefore, you need to migrate to a SAF product like RACF or an equivalent, and you can do that beginning in IMS 8 or 9, as shown on slide 17. Now, IMS 9 includes some RACF enhancements or SAF interface enhancements for the replacement of some SMU functions which previously had no SAF alternatives. They're listed there, things like application group name AOI, TCO security, those things listed on slide 17. So we think of IMS 9 as a transition release so that while you're on IMS 9, you can migrate all of your security off of SMU and get it onto SAF, such as RACF. It does not mean you have to go to version 9. You could go directly from IMS 8 to IMS 10, but that would mean that when migrating from 8 to 10, you would have to simultaneously migrate some of your functions, possibly, from SMU to your SAF interface. That would only apply if you are affected by those things that were taken care of in IMS 9. AGN security is probably the most likely thing you might be using SMU for, and you couldn't use that in IMS 10. Now, IMS 9 has provided a PDF listed on slide 17 which provides a utility to read SMU input and produce RACF control statements. That eases the migration for IMS9 users, that is the migration from SMU to RACF while they're on version 9. If you need more information on migrating from SMU to RACF, there's several places where you can go. Slide 18 lists them. There is some information, of course, in the IMS manuals. There is a IMS9 implementation guide red book that covers those things introduced in IMS9. Or I recommend that you get the replay of the migrating your IMS security from SMU to RACF teleconference, which Maida Snapper did earlier this year. That's still available on replay, and you might want to get the handouts associated with that and listen to what Maida had to say about that migration process. Another thing that's not supported in version 10 is a set of exit routines as listed on 19. The terminal routing, input message routing, link receive, and program routing exit routines are not supported in IMS 10. The functions that they provide are available with the DFS MSC Easy Zero exit routine that was introduced in IMS 7, and it's, of course, available in IMS 7, 8, 9. So you should have done your migration off of those old exit routines to DFS MSC Easy Zero already, or you should do it on your current release before you go to IMS 10. No, we really said that those exit routines that we discontinued in 10 would be discontinued in IMS 8, but we didn't do that. And we said they wouldn't be available in IMS 9, and they were still available. But let me assure you, they are not available in IMS 10, so you need to do that migration before you get to IMS 10. Other exit routines that are not supported, listed on slide 20, have to do with the IMS Connect. The user exit routines HWS IMS 0 and HWS IMS 01 will not be invoked by IMS Connect that comes with IMS 10. You should migrate to the equivalent functionality in HWS SMPL 1 that is available with the IMS Connect that comes with IMS version 9 and with the separate IMS Connect product, IMS Connect 2.2. So this routine provides the same capabilities as the ones we're discontinuing. For more information on that, you can look at the IMS Connect guide and reference. Okay, those are prereqs and coexistence considerations. Let me just now move on to the actual migration tasks themselves, beginning on 22. The migration tasks are basically the same as they've been for all previous versions. So if you've done a migration to a previous version of IMS, this will seem very similar. Of course, as listed on 22, and as I've just mentioned, no support for BakerTam or SMU, no support for those exit routines that have been withdrawn. You should do that migration before you get to IMS 10, if at all possible. Of course, you should check the PSP bucket for warnings and information about migration, review your program directory, and look at the information in the manuals that are available at IMS 10, the release planning guide, installation guide, system definition guide, that will give you guidance as far as doing the migration. Then you install, of course, the prerequisite software and check your IMS tools and related products for any required maintenance, all those things we talked about before, like ZOS 1.7, et cetera, and the maintenance for your tools. And then I also mentioned the coexistence SPEs. You should apply those that apply to you. Certainly the DBRC coexistence SPEs probably apply to you. And if you're using Common Service Layer, these other SPEs apply to you. There is one exit routine that you might need to check to see if it will still operate the same in IMS 10. You probably don't need to check it, though. This is the recon IO exit routine, DSPCEXT0. I say you probably don't need to check it because not many users have written this exit routine. I'm only aware of one or two products from vendors that use this interface. There may be more. I may not be aware of them. But the reason you need to check this is the recon IO exit routine, if you have it, what it does is it gets invoked for changes to the recon and looks at the recon records. since Recon Records change from version to version, then it would probably be affected. Well, it would depend upon which records it's looking at and how it processes them. So it might be affected. More likely, if you're affected by it, it's because you've installed the exit routine as part of the installation of some other product, so the maintenance or coexistence information associated with that product would probably lead you to understand what needed to be done in your case. But as I say, most people do not have this exit routine. Of course, you actually need to install IMS-10. That just uses the standard SMP installation process. And as options, you can use CBPDO or Server Pack for the actual installation process itself. Page 24 talks about the things you do after you actually install the code, the SMP install. You probably want to run the IVP, the Installation Verification Program. I say it's optional. Now it does what the name implies. It verifies the installation, makes sure it's correct. Most people run it because they want the assurance that they did install the product correctly. Of course, you need to upgrade the recons. You do that by executing the DBRC change.recon upgrade command using the IMS-10 level of the utility, and you need to install the Type 4 SVC before you can run that utility. Then, of course, you'd run system definition stage 1, etc., and out of that, you get Type 2 and Type 4 SVCs. You need to install them. Review the IMS resource cleanup module considerations. I'll say more about that, but IMS-10, like 9, uses dynamic resource cleanup module, so there's really not much to do. But be sure, do not delete the IMS-8 resource cleanup module, or Mr. Clean, as you might call it, until you're no longer using IMS. A few more words about that in just a minute. As always, we have to do an ACB gen all to generate a new ACB library, and we need to update our ProcLib members because there's some new parameters in IMS-10, and the easy way to do that is to use a syntax checker, and I will talk more about using the syntax checker in a minute. As far as packaging of the product, the FMIDs are listed on page 25. I don't think I need to say more about that. It's the same structure of the product as we've had in IMS-9. It is the same components, just new FMID IDs. Moving on to 26, the resource cleanup module. Remember, IMS-9 introduced DFS MRC-20, which replaced MRC-L0, or old Mr. Clean, as we used to call it. It changed the installation process because, as of IMS-9 and also true in 10, there is no user setup required. You no longer have to zap that CSECT or do those other things to get the resource cleanup module in your system. If you're still running IMS-8, you still need the old DFS MRC-L0 from IMS-8. Don't change that at all, but when you discontinue using IMS-8, you no longer need that old resource cleanup module. If you're on IMS-9, not using IMS-8, you may have already done that. The IVP has been enhanced for a couple of reasons. Some, they're just enhancements in the IVP itself, to support existing function, even function that existed before IMS-10. So there have been some enhancements in the IVP, to, for example, support RACF implementation and smooth removal. There's a Java sample and IMS Connect sample applications are included in the IVP. The IVP also supports some new function. For example, in IMS-10, the operations manager has a subscribe-unsubscribe capability for unsolicited messages when you're using the operations manager and the common service layer. The IVP has a sample for subscribing and unsubscribing to those unsolicited messages. There's also the invocation of the managed resources application, which is the ISPF application that provides an interface to the dynamic resource definition, or DRD, function introduced in IMS-10. An ISPF interface for defining resources, applications, programs, transactions, routing codes. The IVP itself is invoked as it has been in previous releases, either directly from ISPF option 6, or you can use the IMS application menu, and it's one of those programs on the application menu. And I'll show you what the application menu looks like in a few minutes. The syntax checker should be used to upgrade or migrate your ProcLib members from your previous version of IMS to IMS-10. As the diagram on 28 shows, you can use the IMS-10 syntax checker. It will read ProcLine members that you had from your IMS-9 or 8 system and upgrade them and process them and create IMS-10 ProcLine members. The syntax checker checks parameters to make sure they're valid in IMS-10. New parameters, it gives you help for understanding what values are valid and which ones you might want to use. The syntax checker has been enhanced in 10. It still supports the three ProcLine members it supported in previous releases. That is PB, the basic parameter blocks, DFS-DC for our IMS data communications or TM parameters, shared queues and DFS-SQ member. But it's added support for 10 additional members as shown on slide 29, including DFS-DF-XXX. That's a new ProcLine member introduced in version 10 for various definitions. And the others that it's added support for are those that are part of the common service layer and shared queues, as well as the IMS Connect configuration member and the BPE user exit list member. And, in fact, the IMS-10 syntax checker adds support for some of those same members in IMS-8 and 9 so that you can read those members from your 8 or 9 system and upgrade them and create IMS-10 versions of those members. Now let's move on to migration considerations. And as I said before, what I mean by migration considerations are those things that you will notice will change or affect you after you've migrated to version 10. First thing, KBLA, knowledge-based log analysis introduced in version 9. When you first invoke it under version 10, you'll get a migration panel where you just enter the res library, SDFS ResL or KBLA test load lib data set names. Those are used for generating JCL for KBLA jobs. KBLA produces its output of it is jobs that you run, and it needs to know the data set names you want in your JCL. KBLA supports concurrent use of both IMS-9 and IMS-10 in reading of log records from both of them. The application menu is shown on slide 32. There's just a slight change to the application menu for invoking various IMS utilities or functions like the SPOC and HowDB partition definition utility. The change is that manage resources, the new capability for an ISPF interface into DRD, is now option 2, which means the other things that used to be 2 through 7 are now 3 through 8, and we've added the admin search and notification function, which is new in version 10. You can invoke that from the application menu. As far as PSB sizes, PSBs grow somewhat when going to IMS-10 because PCBs increase by 16 bytes. That could mean that your PSB pool size might need to be increased. I'm guessing it probably doesn't because your PSB pool is probably so large it holds hundreds of PSBs so that you don't have to load them every time a transaction comes in. The most frequently used PSBs are going to be in your pool. When the PSBs get a bit larger, you won't hold so many, but it may not be significant. Instead of holding 1,000, you may hold 950 or something like that, and you probably wouldn't recognize that difference. However, you might want to increase your PSB pool size so that it will hold an equivalent number of PSBs. Similarly, if you have resident PSBs, they'll just require more space. It may be somewhat difficult to figure out what's the right size to make it, but you can get some guidance when you do your ACB gen with PSB all. There is a message put out by ACB gen that gives you the average size of PSBs. If you looked at the ACB gen all, or PSB all for a previous version, and you looked at 10, you could see the change in the average size. It's not necessarily the average size of those that are in your PSB pool, but it'll be the average size of those created by ACB gen, which is probably enough guidance to allow you to understand how much larger you might want to make PSB pool. Next thing about ACB gen is it executes a bit differently in IMS-10 as shown on slide 34. The default execution when you're building DBDs does more processing in IMS-10. It rebuilds DBDs and rebuilds PSBs, which reference the DBD in previous versions. It did not rebuild the PSBs unless there was a database structural change. The change in 10 says it will always rebuild the PSBs that reference the DVD that you're rebuilding. That's done for support of member online change, a new capability in version 10. That could elongate the execution of ACBGen. That's the default. If you are not going to use member online change and you do not want to elongate or take the chance on elongating ACBGen, then you can specify build PSB equal no as shown on slide 34. Now, I wouldn't worry about that unless I knew my DVD that I was building or rebuilding had many, many PSBs referencing it. If it was two or three, it's insignificant. But if it's a DVD used by a couple of thousand application programs and a couple thousand PSBs, then, and you're not making a structural change, then it might be well worth it to specify build PSB equal no. Next slide talks about Sysplex Serial Program Management, a new function in version 10. This only applies to users of the common service layer who have a resource manager and a resource structure. Sysplex Serial Program Management enforces schedule type equals serial across the IMS Plex. In previous versions, sched type equals serial was enforced within an IMS system, said the PSB could only be scheduled once in an IMS system, but it could be scheduled once in each of your IMS systems. If you had sched type equals serial, you probably had it because you only wanted that program or PSB scheduled once across the IMS Plex. So you had operational procedures, definitions, etc., to limit that program or PSB uses to a single IMS system. You no longer need that in IMS 10 because if you have sched type serial with resource manager and a resource structure, serial program management will be enforced across the Sysplex. Next topic is MSC. As I've mentioned before, DFS MSC Easy Zero, that exit routine, is the one to use in version 10 because the older exit routines, CMTR Zero, etc., are no longer supported. So make sure you do that migration before you get to version 10. A couple of other changes. The buffer size for the physical link, MSP link buffer size, ranges have changed. The minimum size is now 1,024, with a maximum size up to 64K. The minimum size is larger than the minimum size for previous versions. It probably doesn't affect you because you probably have a buffer size bigger than 1,024. But you should check that and make sure that when you go to IMS 10 that your buffer size is at least 1,024. And, of course, you need to validate that the partner IMS systems have matching buffer specifications. IMS 10 also gives you an option called bandwidth mode, which is on 37. And Susie Winter will talk about that next month in her teleconference. But basically what this does is allows MSC to be more efficient by sending multiple messages in one transmission. Instead of limiting each transmission to one message, many messages can be buffered together. When you migrate, it defaults to using non-bandwidth mode, the old way. So that'll be compatible with previous releases. Once all your systems are on IMS 10, all your MSC connected systems are on 10, then you can go to bandwidth mode, and that will give you greater bandwidth. And there the minimum buffer size is 4096, but of course that really makes sense because you're going to be sending more messages in each buffer. So let's move on to talking about some of the utilities in IMS 10. The log transaction analysis, statistical analysis, and log merge utilities have some migration considerations. These utilities have been around almost forever. They process log records and produce reports. The log transaction analysis utility has been rewritten. It runs much faster. The JCL continues to work, except the no log and no report parameters on the execute statement are now ignored. Whether you get an output log or a report is just controlled by the presence or absence of the log out in print or DD statements that have been required in the past. The big change is the statistical analysis utility that's also been rewritten. It used to be six steps. It's now one step. So when you migrate, you can't use your old JCL. It's a pretty simple change. You throw away the last five steps. You just have one, the first step, but you move the sysin from step six into step one and delete the logout DD statement from the first step. and you've done your JCL migration and you've gotten rid of most of your JCL, and it'll run much faster if you choose to use this utility. Log merge used to be used to merge logs from multiple IMS systems to feed them as input into log transaction or statistical analysis. You don't have to do that anymore. You can provide extra DD statements in those utilities to process logs from multiple systems. So that's another JCL change if you choose to do that. My hint is use KBLA. KBLA will create the right JCL for these utilities, so the easy way to select your input is using knowledge-based log analysis, KBLA, to select your logs and execute these utilities. Another change in utilities is change accumulation and prefix resolution. These two utilities do a lot of sorting, and the default sort size was 200K in previous versions. Now the default sort size is max. So the core parameter has changed. That's where you specify these. That is, the core parameter has changed if you just let it default. The change was made so that users with non-IBM sort utility, one of the OEM sort programs, was rather sensitive to this parameter and runs better with max than it does with only 200K because of its creation of UCBs. It uses UCBs below the 16 meg line. So allow users with that OEM sort utility to take advantage of faster processing. The default was changed. If you want to limit the sort space to less than what your system default is, as you want to limit when you execute these utilities to be less than what your system default is, then you would need to specify the core parameter, although I suspect you probably wouldn't want to do that. Next change is DBRC timestamp precision. I'm going to explain that on the next few slides. Version 10 keeps DBRC timestamps down to a microsecond instead of just a tenth of a second as in previous releases. This is true once the minimum version of IMS that your recons will use is set to 10.1. So when minverse is 10.1, you'll use extended timestamp precision. Utility control statements, though, are affected no matter what minverse is. Utilities, I'm going to talk about change accumulation utility and database recovery utility in some cases, will use timestamps, and those timestamps can be up to microsecond specifications or specificity, I guess one could say. It also changes recon listings a bit. You can still use abbreviated timestamps. That is, when you input a timestamp, it doesn't have to be all the way to the microsecond in many cases, and I'll show you an example or two of that when we get to the utilities. There are no changes to the DBRC API. It always passed the full microsecond level timestamp, even though the time might not have been accurate to the microsecond. If you do your own GenJCL, as you GenJCL user, you might have a change depending upon whether you specified time format. If you don't specify time format in your own skeletal JCL, then the default for the level of precision will depend upon your minverse value. As I mentioned, timestamp precision affects a couple of utilities. The database change accumulation utility has some control statements where you can specify a purge time. The amount of space in the control statement has to be larger because the timestamps can be larger. As shown on slide 41, for IMS 8 or 9, the timestamp ends in column 37. It might extend all the way out to column 42, in IMS 10, therefore the DD names on this control statements, you can only have three instead of four DD names. So the offset for the DD names for the data sets you're accumulating have moved. Now, if you use GenJCL change accum, of course, it'll create all the right control statements. And since you probably use GenJCL change accum to create your JCL and your control statements, then you won't be affected. That is, GenJCL change accum will create the right thing. Same thing applies to database recovery utility as shown on slide 42. The S control statement, you might specify timestamp recovery, and the timestamp's going to be bigger. And there's another column out there. It used to be column 57, now column 63, which is where you put a C to specify that you don't have any image copy input. Once again, GenJCL solves all your problems. If you use GenJCL.recov to create your JCL and control statements, it'll do the right thing, and you don't have to worry about the change in that control statement. Next, a couple of other DBRC-related items. The DBRC API, introduced in version 9, didn't check security. It does check security now. So the security for DBRC commands introduced in version 8
now applies to the DBRC API. So if you wrote an application program to the API, that execution of the application program might need authorization for the user ID for it to execute successfully in TIM. The version parameter on the DSP API for the DBRC API support really has meaning in version 10. There is a version parameter on the macro that says what level of information you want. And in version 9, the only valid value is version 1, so it really didn't matter, and it was the default. In version 10, you can specify version 1 saying, I want IMS9's information, or information available on IMS9, even though I'm running IMS10. Or you can say version 2, says, I want all the information, including that was introduced in version 10. The default is 2. Now, you don't have to reassemble these programs. They'll continue to work if you roll them in IMS9, assemble them with IMS9 macros, defaulted to version 1, that's okay. But if you do reassemble them and you took the default, the version number will change. And your application program might get different information. It might not work correctly. So what I'm recommending is anytime you write to the DBRC API, specify the version on any macro. That says that you can reassemble that without any changes to the data it gets. So in the future, when future versions of IMS change information in the recons, you will not be affected. Next item in the DBRC area has to do with the IMS Plex name and DBRC group ID. Page 45 just talks about what the change is. I talked about this last month in the teleconference on database and DBRC. The IMS Plex name has always been 5 characters if you have an IMS Plex, that is common service layer in version 8 or version 9. And it used to be internally stored as CSL plus the 5 characters you specify. IMS 10 introduces the DBRC group ID, so internally we store not CSL and the IMS Plex name, but the IMS Plex name with a suffix of the DBRC group ID, which defaults to 001. The listing for the recon just lists the IMS Plex name as the IMS Plex name to 5 characters. The difference you'll see in IMS 10 is on the line where you get the IMS Plex name, you'll also get the group ID. Now, the group ID's purpose is to allow us to have multiple sets of recons in one IMS Plex. We have one common service layer for a set of systems, but we might have multiple IMS data sharing groups with multiple sets of recons. Now, what IMS Plex name did for us with the common service layer, among other things, was provided automatic recon loss notification. So if an IMS system had an I/O error on the recons, it would reconfigure the recons. Automatic recon loss notification would send that notification to all the other members of the IMS Plex, and they would reconfigure the recons. So we can only have one set of recons in an IMS Plex. I mean, the reason for that is everyone gets the notification, no matter which set of recons they're using. IMS 10 enhances this so we can have multiple sets of recons identified by different group IDs, and the automatic recon loss notification will only be sent to IMS 10 systems with the right group ID. The warning is, don't do this, that is, don't have multiple sets of recons in an IMS Plex until all systems are IMS 10, because IMS 8 and 9 systems will process all notifications, whether they're their group ID or not. Page 47 just shows some changes in the recon listing, not a big surprise here. Access serial list static is one of the things. That line has been added. That's for parallel recon access support. Access serial says we're not using parallel recon access. List static has really no meaning with access serial. For parallel recon access, that is access parallel, it has to do with list commands default, whether we're going to enqueue the whole recons or just the records we're listing while we're listing them. And the other thing that's been added is the group ID, as I mentioned on slide 45. It's there again on 47. Finally, let me say something about resource consistency checking. Resource consistency checking is optional in 8 and 9. What it does is when you do a global online change, it ensures that everybody is using not only the same DD names, like switching from ACB5A to ACB5B, but they're also using the same data set names. You get resource consistency checking if you want it, and you have to have a resource manager address space and a resource manager structure, and you have to be using global online change. resource consistency checking is not done in IMS 10. So if you are doing sharing between IMS 8 and 9 and IMS 10, you can still get resource consistency checking, but the checking will not be done in the IMS 10 system. So my recommendation before you go on IMS 10, if you're using resource consistency checking, discontinue its use before you do sharing between IMS 10 and previous versions, because I think that would just be confusing. It's supported, but it might be confusing. Those are the migration considerations. Let me just end by saying a couple of words about the library. The IMS Information Center is available and contains information on IMS 10. Full information will be available at GA time. As I mentioned, that's October the 26th. So you'll be able to get to the Info Center and find all kinds of information about IMS 10 there. Of course, you can go directly to the manuals also. And there have been some changes in the manuals as shown on slide 51. IMS 10 doesn't have any license manuals. It used to be we had license manuals like the FAST manual and the Diagnosis Guide and Reference. They were only available to you if you already had the license. Not true with IMS 10. Once the manuals become available at GA time, you, even though you do not yet have an IMS 10 license, will have access to those manuals. And really, to me, that just makes it easy. You don't have to worry about getting to them online. Everybody can get to them online. It's just an ease of use thing, and individual users in your installation don't have to worry about that anymore. There has been some movement of information between manuals and some new manuals. That's explained in Chapter 5 of the Release Planning Guide. That's already available, the Release Planning Guide, so you can look and see how things have moved in the manuals. There's some new manuals, an IMS Plex Admin Guide, and a System Programming API reference. And some manuals have been discontinued, some kind of single-topic manuals. The information of them has been spread to the appropriate manual. If it's about installation, it's in the installation manual. If it's about administration, it's admin manual, etc. And all manuals are available by just going to the IMS homepage and clicking on Library over on the left-hand side of the IMS homepage. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. In summary, IMS 10 has many attractive new capabilities. We talked about that in previous teleconferences. Susie Wendler will talk about even more of them in next month's teleconference. But what I wanted to do today was talk about migration. There are software prereqs and coexistence requirements, as we outlined. I went through the installation and migration task, and there's more information about them available in the resources I mentioned. And, of course, I wanted to point out some operational differences and usage differences when you get to IMS 10. And the IMS library is available on the web. All the library will be available on General Availability Day, October the 26th, the last Friday in this month. And with that, I'll turn it back to the operator.
Thank you, Rich. Now I'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we'll have a live Q&A session. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice, and please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. And please stand by while we compile your responses. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level? Press star 1. If it was not technical enough, please press star 2. Or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. And again, please stand by for just a moment. Version of IMS are you currently running? If it is version 9, press star 1. If it is version 8, press star 2. Or for version 7, press star 3. And again, please allow us a moment to compile your responses. Question 4. Question 4. When do you plan to upgrade? If it's within 6 months, please press star 1. If within 6 to 12 months, press star 2. Or if it is 12 months, press star 3. And we'll be back with our final question in just a moment. And finally, we hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, please press star 1. Or if no, press star 2. And again, we'll pause. And with that, we'll conclude our survey today. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. Now, at this point, we'd like to move on to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question today. Again, that's star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And we'll turn first to Joe Schweitzer with AT&T.
Yes, Rich.
Hi, Joe.
With the 10-1 unload, will it accept an IMS 9-1 or a reload? IMS 10-1 reload will accept a 9-1 unload file.
Joe, I am not absolutely certain about this. I would expect that it would, that the standard HD unload file format hasn't changed. I'm not aware of any changes. I'm not aware of any testing of unloading 9 and reloading 10, but I don't believe the unload file format has changed between the two releases, but I'm not absolutely certain.
We can ask in the ETR.
Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned ERLM 2.2 is required for 10.1? Has that been around a while, or is that something?
Yes, it was delivered with version 9. That's the IRLM that was delivered with version 9. Version 9 delivered IRLM 2.1 and 2.2, and you could use either one. It's also the current one used by DB2, so IRLM 2.2 has been out for 3 years now.
But you did say you need 2.2 for IRLM 2.2 for IMS 10.1?
That's correct. IMS version 10 requires IRLM 2.2 if you use the IRLM.
You implied there's recon record changes. Did I get that right?
Oh, yeah. There are some recon record changes, primarily usage of reserve bits.
Okay. Where do we go to find those changes?
In version 10, the mapping macros for the recon records have mapping macros, which are in, I believe they're listed in the diagnosis guide and reference, the specific ones for the various recon records. And so if you wanted to check that because you were processing the recon records directly, you could assemble those DSECs in version 9 and version 10 and compare them.
So they'll be in probably MacLib?
Yes, they'll be in MacLib, correct.
You said diagnostic guide, that's the IMS diagnostic guide?
Yes, IMS diagnosis and reference guide. It's a license manual version 9, version 10, it's not a license manual, but that guides you to which macros to assemble.
Okay. with, I think your back out review there implied we have to have all our online logs closed and do a force or do a cold start going to 10.1. You don't want to do emergency restarts with 10.1 after you.
That's right. When you go to a new version of IMS, you have to do a cold start. You cannot do a shutdown or close out your version 9 system or version 8 system and do a warm start. You have to do a cold start to go to a new version.
Will recovery handle 10.1 recovery still handle a 7.1 image copy? I know it's not listed this time.
Good question. Will a 10.1 database recovery utility, DFS URDD0, handle input that's an image copy from version 7? It hasn't been tested. I don't know of any reason why it wouldn't work, but I know it has not been tested and is not supported.
Right. And with the precision on the timestamps for DBRC, let's say we go to minverse 10, we're into microsecond precision on DBRC timestamps. Is he still tolerant to 12 digits, such as, let's say you have an ALEC record that completes at 6 p.m. plus 1 microsecond. If we give him a timestamp that's just 12 digits down to a tenth of a second on, let's say, a timestamp recovery, will he fail it because we're 1 microsecond within the ALEC record?
Yes, he would fail it if you specified a time less than your dealloc part of the end of your alloc record. So you need to give it an extra second in that case. Right. You don't have to specify down to the microsecond. You can stop it. You know, if it was, I think you said 6 plus 1 microsecond,
right,
you can say, you know, if you DBR'd the database and for 15 minutes or something like, you could go 601 or 602. Any of those numbers would be fine. You don't have to specify at all the digits in your time, but it cannot be within the time range, that you have now. Just like as today, you couldn't get rid of, if it was a tenth of a second past as opposed to a microsecond past, you would fail today because we're accurate to the tenth of a second now.
Any way you can have them be tolerant of that 1 microsecond, an example, so we don't have to go out and change our timestamps that we get now with 9.1. You know, 9.1 is tolerant in the example.
Well, 9.1 is only tolerant to a tenth of a second.
Right.
If you,
in this case, it would have worked being 1 microsecond within the ALEC record. But
yeah, but if you'd been a tenth of a second, it wouldn't have worked.
Right.
So, no, there's no way to overcome that in either release.
Short of we don't go to mini version 10.1. We can still stay at a lower level. And
you can leave minverse at 8.1 or 9.1, and then you won't get that level of accuracy, whatever you want to call it. Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Just a quick reminder to press star 1 if you do have a question today. We'll turn next to Dan Pera with Aegon USA.
Yes, I have two questions. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay. First of all, do we know the date for version 8 end of support?
Yes, November the 5th, 2008. Next year, November the 5th, is the end of support for IMS version 8.
Okay, and then the spoofy conversion utility, in order to make it easier to go directly from version 8 to version 10, is that spoofy conversion utility available? Smooth conversion utility.
The smooth conversion, right, smooth.
Yeah. I don't know where I got spoofy from.
Sounds like you're a DB2 guy, but go ahead.
Okay, actually, they're trying to turn me into DB2. But
no. Resist, okay.
Anyway, the smooth conversion utility, is that available without having to get version 9?
No. The last I heard is that is only available with, as a version 9 PTF, not version 8. There's no comparable facility within version 8. Part of it, and the reasoning that I heard was that version 9 had some changes in SMOOTH, and, I mean in RACF, and our SAF interface support, and it assumes in that conversion that those facilities are available in RACF. So they would have to write a different one for version 8.
Okay, so it does more than just generates RACF input.
No, it generates RACF input, but your RACF let's take it, and I assume this is true, that and I haven't actually executed the utility, but let's take a facility in RACF that's available in version 9, such as AGN security. If you had AGN security in your SMU deck and you used the PTF utility in version 9 to convert that, it would assume you had that AGN support for RACF. And if you were in version 8, you wouldn't have it.
Right.
So that's the reason that it's only version 9. It assumes that you have the RACF capabilities available for the things that were added in version 9, such as AOI and AGN.
Yeah, in my case, I don't have any AGN. All I have is a bunch of AOI programs. Most of them do display.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are going to be fairly easy to convert, but a few of them have commands. And,
right.
But
the short answer is it's not available in version 8. At least it's not that I have not heard of it being made available in version 8, and I know it was not available, you know, a month or two ago, and I haven't heard of any change.
Okay. Well, by any chance, would it be available on version 10?
No.
That is, you know, to be able to take the previous version spoofy or SMU, and you know, use it to generate RACF input.
I have not heard of that. I guess there might be a possibility it would be delivered, but I would say you might want to check on if there are any child APARs of the APAR for version 9 that would be like version 10 corresponding.
Okay.
You might call IBM Service and ask. I'm not aware of it.
All right. Well, I guess that's all my questions.
Okay.
And just a quick reminder to press star 1 if you do have a question today. We'll turn now to Fred Case, Bank of America.
Hi, Rich. Just one question. I just wanted to know, is IMS Connect part of Virgin 10 base?
Oh, yes. IMS Connect is delivered with the system component of IMS version 10, just as it was delivered as part of version 9 integrated IMS Connect. It's also integrated in version 10.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And it appears there are no further questions. I'll go ahead and turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
No, I have nothing to add. I just want to thank those who listened today for calling in and remind you that general availability is October the 26th. That's it.
Thank you very much. With that, we'll go ahead and conclude today's conference. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today.